So I'm Jack from Fantagraphics. It's Michael Kupperman. Michael Kupperman has a background in fine arts and has been doing comics since 1990 or so. His prolific career includes animation, magazine illustration, stand-up comedy, and of course, comics. His beloved series, Tales of the Thrizzle, started in 2005 and is currently ongoing. In 2011, he released Mark Twain's autobiography, which is a satirical telling of Twain's life if he had been alive through 2010. The book serves a reflection for his... Oh, sorry. His book serves as a reflection of historical and modern pop culture. Plus, it's funny enough to make a few dance. Conan O'Brien once said that... And it's true. He really said this. Kupperman may have been the best comedy brains on the planet right now. And without further ado, Michael Kupperman.
So I thought I'd read some comics, and then show a little movie, and then maybe read some more comics, and then we can do some questions. So without any further ado, we're going to start. And this first thing is something I did right before the new James Bond came out. It was my prediction as to what the movie would be like, and I think I was pretty dead on. So we'll see. Okay. Hello, M, is that a laundry? That's right, I'm taking in laundry for extra cash. This country is nearly bankrupt, in case you haven't heard, and if people don't see this movie, it will be. This movie needs to be the most exciting thing people have ever seen. They've got to love it more than they love Star Wars. They've got to see it again and again.
Who's the director?
Sam Revolutionary Road Mendes.
Oh, Jesus!
Let's stick to business. I need you to investigate this magazine, Sky Mall. It's a catalog given to passengers on airplanes, but look at what they're selling in it.
Gadgets for my adventures, but how?
That's what I need you to find out. If there's money being made, we need to try to get our rightful share.
Da, 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 da. Hello, Q. What have you got for me this time?
This is going to be a very economical adventure this time, Bond, so pay attention. This is a spork, a spy fork. It's a fork, but it's also a spoon. Easily concealable, you need never be without it. And that's it, pretty much.
What are you telling me? The fancy cars, the concealed gadgets, that's all over?
We simply don't have the money. Oh, but wait, there is one more thing I have to give you.
Thank God for that. What is it, a gun that's also a parachute?
It's a big basket of things you have to eat and drink during the movie because of commercial tie-ins. Let me see, there's Heineken, Coca-Cola, Dunkin' Donuts, After 12 Pound Cake, Reese's Pieces, Jimmy Dean Pork Sausage Frozen Biscuits, Gatorade, and Dinty Moore Beef Stew.
Are you telling me I have to consume all that?
Yes. Also, here's a package of Durabel Extra Strong Condoms. You'll need them to indulge in sexual intercourse.
That's more like it.
Just remember to bring them back intact.
Da, 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 da. Well, time to go do this. Time to go give chase or be chased in exotic locations. Time to romance a succession of women with dirty joke names.
The name is Fontel, Mr. Bond. Fontel Lobotomy, PhD.
To attempt to evoke nostalgia,
this sure is some fancy car chase rush.
But also time for emotional exploration of my backstory, as is the fashion these days.
Remember that time you peed your pants? You were so ashamed. That made you the hard man you are today.
And a few surprises.
We are N, O, and P. You're supposed to see us between M and Q.
We're tired of being ignored. Yes, time to go do this.
Oi, eat this first. We just made a new endorsement deal. Oh, so this is your new sidekick, Jared.
Holiday frolics.
Christmas and Easter are two holidays that each occur at least once a year in which we celebrate Jesus and his accomplishments.
But, uh-oh,
a professor. When we do things such as planting, painting eggs, or decorating a tree, we're actually reenacting what were once pagan rituals.
That's right. When we do these things, we are actually honoring Jesus' half-brother, Pagus. Yes, yes, decorate that tree. Wonderful. which is available through his website. Are comics serious literature? I'd say comics are serious literature. I say they ain't. Let's settle this question. Now, who else says comics aren't a serious literature? Are you being worn out by unnecessary foreplay?
Sleeping at your desk again, Wilkins? You're fired. All because of foreplay.
Bob, you should do what I did. Get yourself a Foreplay 03000. 6 to 8 weeks later. What a beauty! And these scientifically designed controls will ensure that my wife gets enough of her favorite kinds of foreplay. Bob, I was just... Get her, foreplay! What the... A loud shrill alarm from foreplay will let me know when my wife is ready for actual intercourse. Meanwhile, I'm free to work on my biography of Lyndon Johnson. Yes, please rush me, foreplay, the amazing foreplay robot. I understand that the event of my wife divorcing me and marrying foreplay, all my assets will become the property of foreplay. No, don't rush me, foreplay. There's something not quite right about all this, although nothing I can put my finger on right now.
Skull groin.
Hello, I would like a small frappe capigliato.
And a scone!
Yeah, and a pumpkin walnut scone for my accursed skull groin. You totally blew my chances with her skull groin.
What chances?
Mandate the magician. Mandate is performing in Vegas. What is your name, miss?
Janice.
No, your name is Roy, and you're a hobo.
Excuse me, bud.
Now you're begging on the moon.
Fair change.
Time to rejoin us, Janice. Has your experience taught you anything?
Yes, I now know what it's like to be homeless and in space.
You've been a terrific guy. Thank you, and good night.
He didn't remind the audience to tip us. That's not like him.
Later, Mandate has dinner with a seal. One fresh fish and one mint julep, Susan Fay.
No.
Have you forgotten all I taught you? Master Ching. Mandate's mind flashes back to his training in the hidden Himalayan kingdom of Majikistan. And that is how you produce a coin from behind someone's ear. But remember the number one rule. Always remind the crowd to tip their waitress. Master, I am sorry. As a punishment, you must spend the night learning humility.
Spare tree.
The ghost. Peter Mullen was a crime photographer who hated crime. This camera is full of images of crime. Makes me sick. Fucking crime. What's that? Sounds like another goddamn crime. Shut up. Give me a wallet. That sheet, it gives me a crime-fighting idea. I said shut up.
Whoa, repent. Oh, dear God.
Ah!
He's literally dying of fright. That scum is truly responsible. Where is he?
You won't get away.
Ah, shit, no. Ah, someone help me. It's a fucking ghost. Ah!
I love whoever put that fence there. Justice is served. Finally, I've struck a blow. For far too long, this city has been too soft on crime. In fact, they put up a statue to it. I really hate this city. Hey, I should haunt the mayor. There's his house. Mayor, you should stop crime.
Huh? What the?
Just because you're wearing a sheet, that gives you the right to give me orders?
Yeah.
Dick Crazy.
Yo, what's up, D?
Why, hello, Junior. I was thinking back on some of my many foes over the years. Mace Face, Space Race Face, Afro Lace Face, Country House Porch Face, Assorted Meat Face, Dust in the Wind Face, Second Place Face Place Face, Have You Seen This Cat Face, Moby Dick Face, Wandering Snail Face, Mount Rushmore Face, Without a Trace Face, Total Trial Separation Face, Assorted Meat Face Junior, Ordinary Guy Face, bunch of odd concepts that don't work on a face.
Just flip through it.
Whoops.
It's funny again.
Oh, is the whole thing repeated twice? I think so.
Sweet. It's escaped.
Ooh.
It's funnier now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that might be it for the first round. But, now I want to show something that I just finished. This website, ThingX, asked me to do some Twain movies. So I made three. They were due in December, and I just finished them now. This is the first one. You can see me doing the world's worst Twain impression. And then some animation, which I did in a kind of unusual way. I wanted to try to have... There I am. I wanted to try to have a more hands-on thing. I've done animation before, but this time I did animation with sequenced images, which I fed through QuickTime Pro and then iMovie 06. So it's kind of unusual animation. Some of it's a little clunky, but yeah. If it works... There we go.
Is there sound?
Yeah, working on it, yeah. Sorry, try that one more time.
One moment.
No. Now.
Is the jack plugged into your computer? The audio jack?
It's muted it on the player, so.
Oh.
Oh.
There we go. Oh, God.
Oh. Ready?
Yeah.
Looks are perhaps my favorite kind of garbage. When I see a new pile of tattoos, it gladdens my heart to see a few books scattered in some dirty diapers and soiled cabbages. I can just travel country on land. Garbage. This person was legendized in the 1985 cartoon series Twain's Garbage Rap Rambles. The year is 1997. Renegade author Mark Twain journeys from rivers and sewers of America, traveling on rafts made out of garbage, searching America for adventure.
Yeah.
show famous people are disappointed. That was the stupidest game I ever went exploring in.
I heard that. You're not the only one who thinks it'll lick out a trap, you know. The enchantment shall I use to pull your pants down to your shoes.
Merlin had been corrupted and confused by the time that kid. He lost his grasp of what was appropriate. By escaping on my garbage rack, I asserted the principles of human self-respect and freedom. But then he did too. And shortly after that, the cartoon ended.
Soon, and then everyone will know how crazy I am. All right, why don't I read one more round of comics? Why don't you do Moon 69?
Moon 69, the true story of the 1969 moon launch. In 1969, Richard Nixon is courting the hippie vote. 69ing an acid up Groovy. Let's go to the moon. NASA knows that if they don't build and launch a working moon rocket immediately, Nixon will have them all murdered. You have 30 days. Do you hear me? 30 days. But we don't have a rocket capable. Desperate, NASA holds a newspaper contest. Design the moon rocket and win 2 free tickets to the MGM movie The Brave and the Old. Their luck changes when a working rocket is donated by a mysterious Mr. Gorsky. It is magnificent and comes with its own loading gantry, launch pad, etc. NASA has a rocket. Now they need astronauts to fly in it. Condemned prisoners. That's who will fly our spaceship. 12 desperate men are given a reprieve from death row and trained in rhyme. Armstrong steps out. Then a speech he does shout. Aldrin comes next, juggling some eggs. Unfortunately, the press finds out and plays the rape card. What of moon women, if there are any, at the mercy of these animals? Desperately, NASA tries to play it right back at them. But what of the press? Is their moral character not unsavory? But the press keeps up the attacks. Every day sees fresh headlines denigrating the Moon 12. Will the moon be another Australia? Riding up top, Neil Strongarm Armstrong, Buzz Volts Aldrin, and Deadly Smedley Webley. Neil can muscle moon guards, Buzz can disable any moon alarms, and Smedley can cheat any moon widows out of their savings. Also on board, ventriloquist Pip Maxey, who will keep the astronauts entertained, and Coroner Quincy, who will investigate any murders that took place during the mission. For months, eager stowaways attempt to hide themselves on the rocket, hoping for a better life on the moon. You, out of there! As the day of the moon launch continues to approach, Nixon makes a speech designed to appeal to the powerful ant and owl lobbies. I am requesting of NASA that they include an ant and an owl on this historic flight. But star reporters Woodward and Bernstein have their own ideas. We'll disguise ourselves as the ant and the owl to get up to the moon. From up there, we'll be able to see everything illegal that the president is doing. Are you sure this is going to work? On the day of the moon launch, all 12 astronauts come to the launch site with wives and or girlfriends. Also reporting for duty are cleaners, cooks, owl and ant handlers, Quincy, Pitt Maxey, Woodward and Bernstein in disguise as washerwomen, and various other con artists and adventurers. Altogether, 59 people show up. Let us in! We're here to go to the moon! The knock is answered by the Rocket Master General. Here for the moon launch? My goodness, there are so many of you. Too many, in fact. The Rocket Master explains that only 3 people could fit on the moon ship. Quincy has an offer for the others. You can all play murder victims on my show. The rocket takes off, but how are we supposed to communicate with them? Yell up there? Hey, look! A brand new control room donated to NASA by the mysterious Mr. Gorsky. Hello, rocket, hello! Hello yourself! Hello, hello! Someone's talking. Is it a ghost? They better not have given us a haunted rocket. Ooh, I'm a ghost. No, just kidding. This is NASA. NASA, quit fooling around. You really scared us for a minute. In fact, Buzz is actually pretty badly scared. His hair is white and sticking straight up. Ghosts frighten me. En route, the astronauts do some arguing over the map. The moon is over there. It's always been over there. America is transfixed by the incredible sight as the rocket heads through space. You're tearing it. So let go of it. The astronauts are nearing the moon when a Attention, astronauts. This is the mysterious Mr. Gorski.
What?
Huh? I have financed and arranged this entire moon expedition for one simple reason. My wife promised me she would perform oral sex when men walked on the moon.
It's true. Look it up.
Yes. Therefore, I have spent millions engineering human destiny so that it may be so. Amazing.
Incredible.
God be with you, and farewell. The Pope, hearing about Mr. Gorski's reasons for supporting the moon launch, declares the entire mission sinful, but it's too late. As the moon capsule nears the surface, Neil Armstrong gives a heartfelt dedication. Good luck, Mr. Gorski. Aldrin and Wedley man the machine guns. Nerves are running high. I see something moving. Open fire. Kill them all. Spraying bullets, the capsule comes in for a landing. Yeah! Moon dust that has laid still for thousands of centuries feels the fury of the Earthmen's guns. Yeah! Butter, 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 butter. Yeah! Butter, butter. Yeah!
Butter, butter.
Yeah!
Butter, butter, butter.
All right, I think that's enough. Whatever's down there knows the type of punishment we can provide. Hopefully they'll think twice about making a move. Also, I don't think there is anyone down there. Time to make history, boys. For the first time we know of, human boots step onto the moon's surface. And Neil Armstrong says some famous words. One small step for this man, and I'm standing on the moon. Me, who they said would never amount to anything. All my life, the man on my back, keeping me down. Armstrong lets a lifetime of anger loose, ranting for over 15 minutes. Collect moon rocks. When the work is done, the astronauts play a few rounds of volleyball. And then it's time to leave.
Good night, moon.
As the astronauts prepare to head home, they pause to enjoy their victory sandwiches. Everything tastes better in space. But unbeknownst to them, Nixon had packed the sandwiches with explosives. Explode them. Nixon wants all the astronauts dead for some reason. Roll them up. But suddenly, the new three musketeers... Monsieur President, we shall replace thee with the Nixon in the Iron Mask, and you shall take his place in the White House dungeon. Oh, darn it. The world hasn't seen the last of me. As the lunar astronauts hurtle towards Earth, authorities on the ground prepare to return them to prison. We might need more nets. But Armstrong turns the wheel hard right. I'm busting loose. Yee-haw! They're getting away. Stop that rocket. All America watches transfixed as the rocket swings back into space. Announcements are made. They may double back. If you suspect an astronaut is hiding in your barn or garage, alert your local authorities. Celebrity bartender Wontrell Blantoon creates the fleeing astronaut. Creme de menthe, creme de blanc, fizz powder, and vodka. Why are we heading back to the moon? Because I've just realized I noticed something. Gold! All we have to do is dig it up and we'll be rich men back on Earth. As long as we don't murder each other first. But soon, oh my God, Smedley is dead! Murdered! I didn't do it. I didn't do it either. Maybe it was a ghost. Is the moon haunted? Calm down, Buzz. I better inform Earth what has happened. And just stay put, you two. We're sending an Earth detective to investigate. Well, I guess we better sit right here and wait for this detective NASA is sending. I just hope they don't use this as an excuse to take away our gold. And back on Earth, we're almost ready for blastoff, Lieutenant Columbo. That's great, but I have just one more question. When you get close to the moon, is it full all the time? That is to say, worried about that guy who bit me last night. I think he was a werewolf. With the astronauts back on the moon, one of them has been murdered, and NASA is sending the renowned detective, Lieutenant Columbo, to investigate. This will be a real challenge, solving a crime in space. But I'm worried I'll turn into a werewolf. Here comes that policeman. It's happening! The second space capsule crashes onto the moon. While inside, a shocking transformation is taking place. Well, here comes the Earth detective. Look out! He's a werewolf! Luckily, I loaded this gun with every kind of bullet just to be on the safe side. Shoot! Shoot! I've got 6 different kinds of bullet in this gun. Chocolate, chalk, cheese, gold, silver, and spicy Italian sausage. His finger tightens on the trigger. But, he's changing back to human. So the Earth is the cure for lycanthropy. We've learned so much on this mission. Give me some pants, then I gotta investigate you two. Okay, now I gotta find out which one of you is a murderer. Neither one of us is. Both of us have committed terrible crimes, but we're innocent of this one. Look, he left a note. We haven't read it, but maybe it will help exonerate us. I guess I'd better read it. Dear to whom it may concern, being on the moon made me feel sad, so I killed myself. I thought I'd make it look like either Aldrin or Armstrong had killed me, but now I see how wrong that is, and I'm leaving this note to set the record straight. Well, I'm dying now, so that's all you'll hear from me. Sincerely yours, Smedley. I guess that lets you two off the hook. Phew, what a relief. Smedley was a real heel, but at the end he did the right thing. The murder mystery cleared up, Columba departs, and Aldrin and Armstrong load the gold into their spacecraft. Hey, I just realized we've been forgetting to wear our helmets all this time. Weird. I feel fine. Look at this little fella. He just appeared and became my best friend, and now I'm going to call him Gleepy. That's great. Finally, 27 days after they left Earth, the moon capsule is on its way back, with astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin on board, also a ton of gold the astronauts are hoping to keep, and their new oddball space pal, Gleepy. This is Walter Cronkite, and this has been the news as they told it to me. The space rocket is re-entering Earth's atmosphere when... Gleepy, my face! No! Ah! Kneel! Kneel! We will conquer the Earth. The alien has merged with Armstrong. We've made you into a robot, Aldrin. I'll hunt down my former teammate for you. Let the games begin. Half-alien Armstrong succeeds in disappearing, but meanwhile, Aldrin has put his own plans into action. Gosh, son of a bitch. Half-robot Aldrin uses moon gold to open casino in Macau. I only follow one essential rule. Always give a sucker an even break. Yes, sir, Mr. Half-Robot Buzz Aldrin.
The end.
Thank you. Eisner nominated, believe it or not.
So where are we at?
Shall we?
Hey, we could do one more, right?
Do you want to do one more?
Yeah, let's do one more. Let's do Quinception.
You guys want to do one more?
Yeah. Yes. This next story was supposed to be in the Best American Comics, but they got scared of Quincy's lawyers, so it's not going to be in the Best American Comics. Close the window. No. Do the red X up there.
Sorry.
Oh. Whoops. Okay. Here we go. Quincy, ME. Okay, medical students, what's up? We're scared to talk to women. That will be today's lesson. I'm frightened. Soon. Okay, watch me talk to this woman. Oh, I'm scared. Hello, my dear, I made you this drink.
He prepared her beverage.
You have a lovely tan. Such smooth skin, too.
He's touching her.
Oh, come grasp me, sweet unconsciousness. What the? They've all passed out. What a bunch of undercooked string beans. Captain, throw them overboard. Aye, aye, sir. They'll wake up in the water and swim their way to shore. It'll toughen them up a little. Well, back to business. What have you got for me, Sam? Just this guy. It's Charlie Chaplin. But that's impossible. He died years ago. Well, here he is, dead all over again. The mustache, the hat, it's definitely him. I need answers, and I know where to get them. I'm going up to heaven to ask St. Peter. Okay, Quince, I'll hold down the fort until you get back. Finally. Hey, Peter, how's it going? Quincy, what an unexpected pleasure. Hey, Pete, Hold on a minute, Quincy. I've got news myself. Just like you, I've got my own comic book. Mmm, looks interesting. Tuesday night. A hard rain is falling in New York City, driving people off the streets, good and bad alike. But in a neighborhood church basement, some have come to seek redemption, or a second chance. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the basement of St. Anne's Parish Church and the Tuesday night meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. If that's not what you thought this was, you should leave. I see some new faces here. Why don't you introduce yourself to the group? My name is Anne. Hi, Anne. And I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober now for 10 months and 17 days. I'm Ralph. Hi, Ralph. I'm a drunk. Been clean now for a year and a half. Good to be here. My name is Peter. Saint Peter. I am an alcoholic and I've been sober now for approximately 200 years. Are you saying that you're the real honest-to-God Saint Peter? One and the same, and I assure you, I'm always honest to God. Please, tell us more about yourself. Do you really work in heaven? I do. You could call me heaven's doorman, I suppose. I greet the recently departed at heaven's gates and check their behavior in a giant book. If everything is kosher, so to speak, then I let them in. If not, well, they may need to wait a bit or spend some time downstairs. It can be stressful, and several hundred years ago, I started drinking to compensate. Sir, you can all come in. Luckily, I finally quit by learning to acknowledge a higher power. But I'm severely tempted sometimes. Like this week, it started out great. My friend Quincy, the medical examiner from that TV show, had stopped by, and I was showing him my new comic book. Looks great. I can't wait to read it. Isn't this exciting? We both have our own comic books. Hey, wait a minute. Am I in your comic book or are you in mine? Hold on a minute, Quince. A celebrity is coming in and I need to make a quip for the editorial cartoonists. Ready, boys? Here he comes. Welcome, Henry Winkler. We've been waiting for you. We've got a jukebox that needs banging on. This is confusing. I think I can explain what's going on, Mr. Quincy. Call me by my first name, which is also Quincy. Hey, you're Leonardo DiCaprio. I didn't know you were dead. I'm not. I'm here because you're dreaming. I'm dreaming? Hey, I'm glad I'm getting some sleep. Frankly, I need it. Look at these bags under my eyes. Well, if you want a really good sleep, go to sleep within your dream. Dream time is longer, so you can sleep for days. That sounds great. Thanks. I will. See ya, Quince. All right, now to get some really good rest. Reservoir Dogs 2, featuring Snake and Bacon. All right, you guys, we're doing another heist. The last one didn't go too good, and we all got shot. It's a miracle we all survived. I hope no one's got any hard feelings. But what about him? Is he a cop? We never really settled that. I guess we don't know for sure. I've got my eyes on you, mister. I ain't a cop, and I hope you guys become convinced of that during our commission of a California Penal Code 503. Okay. So I'm going to get down to details. First, I'm going to give you all code names. You're Mr. Ham, Mr. Iguana, Mr. Hot Dog, Mr. Salamander, Mr. Prosciutto, Mr. Newt, and Mr. Pork Loin. And our new associates, Mr. Snake and Mr. Bacon. Say hello, boys. I'm Real Bacon. Hey, wait a minute. Why do they get to have names that are basically descriptive of what they are? Meanwhile, I've got to be Mr. Pork Loin? That's seriously going to put a crimp in my romantic action. There's not going to be any romantic action. We're pulling a heist, not going on a dating cruise. Aw, come on. I'm not saying I'm going to be keeping an eye out for attractive single women during the robbery, but what if one falls into my lap? She might be the love of my life. You say no thank you, and you move on. Can't I at least have a more attractive pork-based food product name? I mean, he gets to be Mr. Hot Dog. That's a cool name. Can't I at least be Mr. Salami? No, and I'm tired of arguing with you about this. Excuse me. Yes? Are we going to elude pursuers in brightly colored mini-cars while Cockney music plays? Nah, we're not going to do that. Then I'm in the wrong place. Excuse me. What the hell? This is a heist meeting. We don't just let civilians walk in off the street. There are civilians here. That's really unprofessional. Here's another one. Hey, you. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Who, me? Yeah, you. This ain't a beach club. This ain't a sauna. You can see we're all fully dressed. So why are you sitting there in your underwear? You hoping to start a trend? We're not interested. I'm still asleep, still trapped in my dream. Tell it to the Marines. This isn't restful. I gotta find a pair of pants. You leaving? Good. We've got a heist to discuss. Okay, now he's gone. I've got t-shirts for everybody. Hope I got your sizes right. Nice, huh? My nephew did the graphics. Whoa. Yellow? I would much prefer a black shirt. In here, Quince.
Sam, boy, am I glad to see you.
Come straight through, Quince. And accepting the Nobel Prize for Forensic Medicine, Quincy, Maurice Edmund Quincy, M.E.
Thanks for this.
Boo! Get some pants, you bum! Boo! Boy, tough crowd. This way, Quince.
Sam, you fooled me last time.
So I'd better... Yeah!
And that's when I always wake up, bathed in sweat.
Interesting. Mr. Quincy, I'm afraid that all the signs point to you still being asleep.
What?
Think about it. You dissect corpses for a living, but there are always hot babes around for you to romance on your yacht. Think of what this would mean in reality.
Yeah, I fished this out of a corpse for you.
You solve murders, take part in car chases, and burst into senators' offices yelling, all like someone in a dream. That's just my life. Also, look, I'm riding a giant hamster. There are witches stirring a bubbling cauldron over there. A bat frog is destroying the city. Your feet are dogs. The couch is made out of living turtles. I'm still not convinced. That's the end.
So, a few questions. Let's see, we have about 10 minutes or so. Has your humor changed at all since you've started watching more television, or since you've had, like, you know, different influences through other media besides just comics?
Well, sure. I've always watched a lot of television. But there are influences from other things. For instance, I was listening to a lot of old radio dramas for a while, which you can find on the Internet Archive online. And there was actually one where people go to the moon and they get lost on the way there. And it was hilarious. There was also a Cockney Stoker, which I didn't think I could poach. But I'm always looking for new jokes. Yeah.
Does New York as a city, being part of the New York scene so much, have an influence on the stuff that you do when you make your comics and create your gags?
Yeah, New York is great for creativity because it's so unpleasant and tense and dangerous. If you go to Maui, there aren't that many people doing comics there. But in New York, it's a good place.
A lot of your comics seem to have an undertone of like social justice or social politics, or have a deeper meaning when it comes to the way they relate to the world. Is that something that you intend, or is that just naturally happen through your own social or your own beliefs in the process?
I think, you know, generally what I write tends to go along the lines that I believe. You know, my beliefs bleed through, definitely. I'm anti-millionaire and pro the people.
Has having a kid changed your humor at all? Has that had a different perspective on the world and the way you see your art in general?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think it's actually part of an art. Being an artist is trying to keep a grasp on what you felt when you encountered the world for the first time. So I think that's central to me, kind of keeping that sort of honesty of your first reactions. Seeing the world through his eyes can be a refresher course.
Sitting up here today, you were reading your comics and you could feel a lot of the laughs, but you also have a background in stand-up comedy, which is something that's performance-based. Do you feel like when you're making your comics, you have that stand-up comedian in you that's coming out on the page?
Yeah, a little bit, definitely. I mean, comics are kind of like performance. They're just happening in a very delayed time. But definitely reading them out loud teaches you more how to kind of hit the laugh points. And that definitely is part of it now.
Do your comics influence your stand-up comedy in that way?
Well, I've only done stand-up a few times, and half of those were as twain. I'm still a little shy on stage, but I've been thinking of developing more of a stand-up act and trying to bring in the same laughs, hopefully.
And So Twain has been a character that you've been embodying since you created this book?
Right. Well, once I did the book, I felt like, might as well start, hamming it up as Twain. Why not?
Has Twain always been an influence on you?
He's just always been present, because I grew up in Connecticut, and, he's in ads there. He used to live in Hartford, so they whore him out a lot. So he's always been kind of a character that was present. Yeah.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit? Your work has always struck me that even in the comic space, it's very, very personal, and it's a very, very individual voice. And it's why I found it interesting watching the pilot for Snake and Bacon. And I was just wondering what that experience was like trying to translate something that is very singular, and I imagine, you working on each page to something where you're trying to express the same comedy, but you're having to involve other people in it. And I'm just curious whether that was freeing or frustrating, or how that sort of felt as an adaptation.
Well, for that, actually, other people did a lot of the heavy lifting. So I didn't really have to do much beyond what I'd done. I just had to translate into visual terms. All the animation in the Snake and Bacon pilot was from my book, Snake and Bacon's Cartoon Cabaret. So it was just kind of repeating the drawing, but in a more advanced fashion. And then all the live-action stuff was actually written by the two guys who produced it, Scott Jacobson and Rich Blomquist, who were writers for The Daily Show. So for that one, I put in a lot of effort, and I did things like I helped choose the music and, direct the audio and stuff. But it was much more linear. With something like the Twain film that I just showed, for instance, I have no idea of the quality or how funny it is or anything, because I've just put so much time into it that it's just hard to see anymore,
Was it weird for you then to compare something like the Twain, like when you actually saw the finished pilot and it was, sort of with somebody else's lens?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. That's something I thought up in the middle of the night in my 20s, that made me giggle, actually became a TV show and, all this other stuff. It's kind of incredible. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Oh, my pleasure.
So I find that a lot of your works kind of have a slight kind of dreamlike quality to them, not just conception, but a lot of them have this kind of just making these weird shifts midway through and random titles of things coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of dream logic at work, definitely. That's something I just love the language of dreams and the kind of way they flow. So that's a huge part of it for me. The funny and then the dreams. Yeah.
You have a lot of other pop culture references, the Quincy and his scattered throw, which is great. Are you concerned that people may not get the references? Or?
Yeah, totally. I couldn't believe that I did an 18-page Quincy comic. I finished it and I was like, what is wrong with you? For God's sake. So you have a family to support.
But it's funny, I remember Quincy, but I think, other people here may not. But it's funny regardless, or...
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think if you go for what's personally funny and don't worry too much about people getting it, it will hopefully be funny to them as well. But that definitely is a niche. And I went back and I watched a Quincy to do the script, and I couldn't believe how boring it was. I mean, I think Jack Klugman is a brilliant performer, but it was not the best show in the world. I just was enjoying it, It's the same with the Twain book. I kind of just started writing it, and I was like, I could do a book of this, And, as an artist, what I find is that you constantly have these voices in your head telling you what you should do, or what you need to do. But the question I find that's really valuable to ask myself is, what can I do? Like, what can I do right now, And with the Quincy thing or the Twain book, I was like, well, I could do this right now, So I did it.
Do you feel like your work cross-medium has an effect on your other work? Like, Twain is more a prose book, a prose fiction. Does that have more of an effect on your comics than something like your animation?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, like, you cross-mediums with all your different humor work. So do you think that doing prose made your writing your comics stronger, writing animation and illustrating your own comics have an effect on each other?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure if my writing has become stronger, but I'd like to believe it. Yeah, definitely every bit of it, you know, builds another kind of tool for me to use. Yeah.
I was just wondering when you were first, you know, growing up and that sort of thing, you have all these references from television and literature and you make comics and that sort of thing. I was just wondering, you know, what were the things that really got you excited about comedy and comics when you were growing up, like your influences?
Well, there were a few TV shows when I was young. The first show I really loved that was comedy was The Goodies. Probably no one has ever seen that. Yeah, it was a British thing with three guys. It was kind of an also-random Monty Python. I mean, they're very funny guys, but... and then later, the huge influence for me was SCTV, which I just love, you know, that show still. And they did a lot of the same things I do. They had the kind of dream logic, and you didn't know where the stories were going, and they were taking their own time and very personal preoccupations throughout. And that was a huge one for me.
So if it's mostly like media, like television and movies and that sort of thing, how did you drift towards comic books?
I think I just liked having so much control over something, you know. And it's, to me, it's a beautiful democratic art form because you can sit there with a piece of paper and a pen and just do it, you know. And I love just being able to do things. What we end up, you know, artists and other people who work in any kind of art, you know, have to depend on corporations a lot. So I kind of, that's been a force too, moving back and forth from that, because they can help you or they can limit you, but I really like just being able to do, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a two-part question. The first part is your earlier work is very, it's got sort of a woodcut quality to it. It's very hand-drawn.
Yeah.
And has a really organic, and later, your later work is cleaner.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask about that. And the second part is, do you prefer sex holes or sex blimps?
sex blimps, I think. Yeah, it gets claustrophobic down there underground. And yeah, my earlier work is kind of obsessive. I don't know if that makes it more marginal. I'm not sure. But I mean, a big factor was time, just being able to do stuff quickly. That first book took me, you know, it's several years of work in there. And part of it's just been working at a much faster rate. And with stuff like the Twain book, the comics in there, I just felt like if the writing's strong enough, maybe the artwork doesn't have to be so obsessive. It can just carry the jokes.
Or have your tools changed?
Oh, yeah, my tools have changed a lot. Actually, for the last few months, I've just been working digitally. Like that James Bond comic was all drawn digitally, just straight onto the computer. Because I was already doing comics and stuff in pieces and putting them together in the computer. So I wouldn't have any real originals anyway. It was just a bunch of pieces. So I just made the leap into going to the computer.
I think that this is the last one.
Was Strange Tales a positive or negative experience?
Oh, it was a positive experience as far as creatively, and then business-wise, you know, not so great. They're jerks, you know. I mean, the editors are nice, but yeah. I have nothing to lose. I've told them that. I mean, doing the work was very exciting, and then, you know, apart from that, mixed bag, I guess. I'm happy to have done them, but I was hoping they would, you know, we could move up and do more, but that never materialized.
It looks like we have one more itching question, so why don't you guess your question?
I was wondering, because you mentioned SCTV, they're very current character based, and sex roles.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Twain and Einstein, I could just write that stuff forever. I just find them very easy to write for. It's like Hope and Crosby in the Road movies or something, you know, just that kind of energy. But it's funny because Twain has definitely a percentage of Eugene Levy's Walter Cronkite in him. I don't know if you remember, but his Walter Cronkite was a hilariously louche kind of, you know, rascally guy, and that was definitely an influence. Yeah.
Well, I think that we're done time-wise, so thanks for coming.
Thank you so much.